Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to Nature Spirituality. This is Selena Fox, your host. Tonight, we take a look at labyrinths, types of labyrinths, and ways of working with them as part of nature spirituality practices. Labyrinths have origins in the mist of time. We know that labyrinths have been around for several thousand years. They not only have existed in artwork and actual locations, but they have been part of stories and myths. Perhaps one of the oldest and most famous of the labyrinth stories comes to us from Greek mythology. And this harkens back to Minoan times and civilizations. King Minos of Crete had Daedalus build a labyrinth at Knossos to hold the beast known as the Minotaur. Now, this type of labyrinth was a maze type of labyrinth rather than the meander labyrinth, which is more common used for spiritual practices in contemporary times. The idea of a labyrinth, there are paths that twist and turn, and when taking the form of a maze, this can be a form of entertainment, but when it takes the form of a meander where you walk one path and it takes you continuously into the center of the labyrinth, that can be a very powerful experience as part of personal and group spiritual practices. Some of the images of the labyrinth have appeared on ancient coins. The labyrinth on coins, and that is being used today, not only amongst pagan people, but people of many different spiritual traditions and paths, is sometimes called the classical labyrinth, the Minoan labyrinth or the Cretan labyrinth. Some forms of this ancient labyrinth are circular, so the pathways flow around in circular motion. There are variants of that actually have it more in the form of a square, so there's actually corners with the turnings of the path in the labyrinth. In the Middle Ages, labyrinths became popular and often were put on the floors of these magnificent cathedrals that were built and other kinds of churches. The most famous of these is the Chartres Cathedral. And the labyrinth was constructed in the early 13th century, and it continues to survive to this day, and people continue to make pilgrimage to that place. There are other styles of labyrinths. There's a version called the Abingdon. Some people have a labyrinth that they call the Hecate labyrinth. And there's some contemporary labyrinth forms with their own patterns. One pattern of labyrinth is the spiral labyrinth. And we created a spiral labyrinth at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve back in 2006. And this labyrinth is created in a way that one walks counterclockwise to the center in a path that spirals around. In the very center is the ritual space. Sometimes we have a fire there. Sometimes it's an altar. Sometimes there are benches or other seating around a central altar or a fire pit. And group ritual is done there. As one leaves the spiral labyrinth at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, we go out clockwise. And the reason we have designed it in this fashion is that the counterclockwise moving into the center of the labyrinth is done since counterclockwise in a number of traditions, including the circle craft tradition, which is one of the foundational traditions for Circle Sanctuary as an organization and our ceremonies. The counterclockwise tradition is a way of releasing. So as you head to center, you let go of what is not serving, what is not needed. One comes to center and deepens one's connection with the divine, and then drawing insight and healing, one then moves clockwise outside and around the labyrinth and taking that clockwise motion into manifesting it into day-to-day life to actually carry the power of this labyrinth back into personal practice. There's many references to labyrinth in literature. There are thousands of labyrinths now that have been created worldwide in the last 25 years. Indeed, online there's something called the Worldwide Labyrinth Locator. Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserves Spiral Labyrinth is among the thousands that are listed there. If you are interested in visiting a labyrinth in your own local area, that would be a good resource to connect with. It not only gives the location of the labyrinth, but gives information about its type, its accessibility, times that are open, whether it's private or public, and some other important information. I'd like to share with you now some of the different forms of labyrinths, some ways they differ from each other, and some ways that they have things in common. An important consideration about a labyrinth is its duration. Although there are many labyrinths that would be called permanent, they have been built to last, some labyrinths are actually temporary. An example of this is the classical labyrinth made of 1,000 candles. That is part of our summer solstice celebrations at the Pagan Spirit Gathering that happens every year, summer solstice week, typically at a campground in the Midwest. Circle Sanctuary sponsors this gathering, and in 2020 we'll be celebrating our 40th anniversary. Our candlelight classical labyrinth has been one of our traditions for celebrating summer solstice. It is a huge labyrinth, and it takes a whole team of people to lay out the labyrinth And then once it is laid out, the candles are put in place, then they are kindled. And the hundreds of people that take part in our Pagan Spirit Gathering every year then have the opportunity to walk that labyrinth on the longest day of the year. So it's kindled at dusk, and then at dawn, the labyrinth concludes its work as sacred space. During the evening, people walk silently. The paths are big enough that two people can walk side by side. And many people will do that, walk with a partner. Other people walk just themselves. And it takes a bit of time to journey into the center of the labyrinth. And in the center, we typically have a sacred fire, and people are able to scry into the fire. Walking the labyrinth at summer solstice evening time is an opportunity to connect with a sacred practice in a sacred space. And although the solstice sun is not visible in the sky, it is represented by the thousand candles that form the labyrinth pattern. Sometimes we have as many as 150 people walking the labyrinth at any given time. By the time dawn comes, fewer people are out walking and being present, but some people specifically get up just before dawn to walk the labyrinth as the solstice time dawn comes on. I've had the opportunity to connect with the Pagan Spirit Gathering classical labyrinth on multiple occasions and at different times. I've been there when I've been one of the few people taking part in a labyrinth walk, and I've also been part of a labyrinth walk that has had many people taking part at the same time. In addition to the temporary labyrinth, a labyrinth that is created specifically for a particular ritual or occasion, and the labyrinths that are permanent, that are built to last for a long time, there's what I call the transportable labyrinth. Some people prefer to work with this type of labyrinth. It has the permanence. Typically, it's made of canvas, and the labyrinth pattern is put on the canvas, and then the canvas is rolled up when it's not in use, and then this type of labyrinth can be taken to different events. So it has the permanence of being its own type of special art, and the temporary characteristic of being put in different locations for particular occasions. In addition to looking at the duration type of labyrinth, we should also look at what kinds of materials a labyrinth might be made of. Now, in the cathedrals from the Middle Ages, typically made of marble and done with different colors of marble to show the pathways of the labyrinth. Some are made of stones that form the boundaries of the patterns. A really common form of material for a labyrinth is concrete. The These are both indoors and outdoors, and the concrete may have the labyrinth actually painted on it, or it may have materials embedded in it that form the labyrinth walkways. There's also the hedge labyrinth. The spiral labyrinth we have at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve is an example of a hedge labyrinth. With a hedge labyrinth, one needs to keep the pathway mowed. We form our hedge of wild flowers and natural vegetation that grows up on its own on our land. Some people who have a hedge labyrinth actually plant specific types of plants to help define the pathways around the labyrinth. And one of those forms of plants is boxwood, especially in moderate climates. Now, boxwood can be trimmed, and it can last quite a long time. Mazes that are used in for entertainment purposes and that actually have their roots back in colonial America and old Europe, boxwood has proved to be a really good material for a long-lasting maze. And so whether you have an actual maze which has some dead ends and some tricky pathways in it, or you have boxwood for a labyrinth that's the meander kind where you walk one continuous path to the center, you'll find that boxwood is a really good material because it can last quite some time. Now, some people who work with a temporary labyrinth will actually have a labyrinth on a beach setting far enough back from the shoreline that water doesn't interfere with it. And then someone will take a stick or other marking instrument and actually carve the labyrinth pattern in the sand. Some people will create a flat space for a labyrinth outdoors and then have stones and other items form the pathways, and they're actually set in, and then some kind of mulching material, it might be gravel or bark, is put on the pathways to help with the maintenance of the labyrinth. So there's a variety of different types of materials that have been used for labyrinths. And so it may be wood, it might be living plants, and it might be a combination of materials. And, of course, the canvas for the transportable labyrinth, which I mentioned previously, is also something that is commonplace. Labyrinths not only take the form of a sacred site, but there's some other kinds of labyrinths that people work with, and they can vary in size. Popular in recent decades is something known as the finger labyrinth, and the finger labyrinth may be as big as a plate, a dinner plate. And the labyrinth pattern is put in the plate. It's actually fired. It becomes an actual part of that plate. And rather than walking the labyrinth, one will use that as a meditation focus, similar to a mandala, or one will take one's finger and move around the pathways to the center as a kind of moving meditation, but with limited needs to move. I've seen finger labyrinths that are actually quite small, that are even like a half or a quarter the size of a dinner plate. And I've even seen labyrinths that have taken the form of an amulet that one wears around one's neck as a symbol of connecting with the labyrinth. So we have labyrinths that you can use through touch with your finger. We have the walking labyrinths, which I've talked about already. Then we have visualized labyrinths, having such a familiarity with a labyrinth that one can close one's eyes and visualize the labyrinth and actually do a guided meditation for oneself into the labyrinth through an internal meditation. In this cyber age, we also wouldn't be complete with talking about the different sizes and types of labyrinths without mentioning the cyber labyrinths, virtual labyrinths. And there are labyrinths at various websites, and people have found creative ways to have labyrinth art be part of cyberspace. Let's take a few moments and examine some places where labyrinths are located. The two big types of locations, outside or indoors. The advantage of an indoor labyrinth is that you are able to access it regardless of weather conditions. The outdoor labyrinths, sometimes they're under a shelter, sometimes they're open to the sky. Some labyrinths are held, are at spiritual centers, and I've been to spiritual centers that have both an indoor labyrinth as well as an outdoor one. And I think of one place that I spoke at about 15 years ago or so. It was near Lake Michigan. And the indoor labyrinth was on the basement level of a wonderful religious center. The main sanctuary hall was on the main floor, and then underneath it, in the basement, right under the main sanctuary, was this beautiful Chartres labyrinth. Outside, they had a labyrinth as well, and that took the form of a classical labyrinth. Indeed, some centers have multiple types of labyrinths because of their popularity, and sometimes a labyrinth has a particular purpose or theme connected with it. Increasingly, labyrinths have been appearing in medical facilities, in and around them. And sometimes they are part of a healing garden and are on the hospital grounds. And sometimes there is an indoor one that's fairly small for someone to do some personal work, and then a larger one outside. Different types of spiritual centers may have labyrinths. People may have labyrinths in their homes or in their backyards. University campuses increasingly have begun having labyrinths as part of the grounds and having them available. Another aspect of location has to do with accessibility. And part of this is, you know, how easy is the labyrinth to walk? And is it wheelchair accessible? Or how wide are the pathways? And what are the hours that the labyrinth is available to be visited and worked with. Some places have very specific hours that the labyrinth is available. As I've traveled across the U.S. and gone into some other countries as well, as my schedule permits, I often will check out one or more of the labyrinths in the area. And sometimes these labyrinths are just available round the clock, and you can come and go as you feel called to do so. Others are only open at specific times and with facilitators. Some centers will have a labyrinth night, and people will be stationed there to greet people as they come and to be available for any kind of support that might be needed. I do think it's important, if you're going to be visiting a labyrinth for the first time, one you haven't gone to before, that you do some research into it. Not only when it is open and availability, but what are the protocols around that particular labyrinth? Just as you would for a sacred area of other types. Are you permitted to talk as you walk the labyrinth, or do you need to be very silent? Is there a particular format of ceremony that you need to take part in order to experience the labyrinth? Is there a particular place where you can rest and wait before entering the labyrinth and do some preparation work? What's the history of the labyrinth? Who created it? What is its purpose? Is there a cost for the labyrinth? Are donations taken? What do the donations do? Are they for the maintenance of the labyrinth, or is the labyrinth done in connection with fundraising for a charitable cause? So there's a number of different things to find out about going to a particular labyrinth for the first time. The Worldwide Labyrinth Locator is really helpful in that regard. What are the uses of a labyrinth? Well, there are a variety of different uses, and part of this depends on the labyrinth itself, and part of it depends on the person who's seeking to do labyrinth work. Some labyrinths are collectively created, and then those who create the labyrinth have the opportunity to walk it together or to do ceremony together. I have spoken at a variety of festivals, and in addition to the candlelight form of labyrinth we have at Pagan Spirit Gathering, I've been to some gatherings where they actually use some kind of holiday lights that are staked to the ground in particular patterns. And the act of creating the labyrinth is a ritual. The act of walking the labyrinth is a ritual. And the act of taking the labyrinth down itself is a ritual. Creating a labyrinth that, whether it's temporary or permanent, is a sacred creative experience. And some people will work with a labyrinth in connection with a life passage. Indeed, I've done some weddings in a labyrinth. I have had couples have an anniversary hand fasting in a labyrinth. And not only does the couple walk the labyrinth to its center. But in some cases, everybody in the wedding party and all attending the ceremony all walk the labyrinth and then will gather in the center, given that it's big enough for the situation, to take part in the wedding, or it might be a baby blessing, it might be a funeral or some other passage rites. Some labyrinths are created in connection with a seasonal festival. I mentioned the pagan spirit gathering, classical labyrinth of candles as a way of celebrating summer solstice. Winter solstice, fall equinox, spring equinox, the Celtic fire festivals of Beltane, Lunasa, Samhain, and Imbolc, all of those are times where a labyrinth might be included as part of the celebration. Some will do a labyrinth walk at a dark moon, some at a full moon. Some people will have a labyrinth that's focused on divination. And when one arrives at the center, there is some type of divination method that those who arrive are able to connect with. Now, this can take the form of a bowl with cards with messages on them, or a cauldron with rune cards, oracle cards, tarot cards on them. And one gets to the center and then reaches into the cauldron and pulls a card out. And that is the message for the person. Some labyrinths have divination by the means of scrying. The most common is scrying into a fire. The fire might be on a tripod, it might be on the ground, it might be in a fire bowl, it might take the form of a candle. But there are other forms of scrying for labyrinth walks. It may be looking within a cauldron of water. It might be gazing into a thurible with incense burning. It might take the form of a variety of stones or shells or other items that could be cast, such as the casting of cowrie shells in some Afro-Caribbean traditions. Divination might take the form of rune stones or rune sticks. And for traditions that will have oracular encounters, there may be someone serving as a living oracle that as one reaches the center, the living oracle would then give a message. Some labyrinths will have altars along the way. At Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, in each of the four directions, as one makes one's way around the labyrinth, one will encounter an earth altar, an air altar, a fire altar, a water altar, with the center of the labyrinth being the spirit altar. In labyrinths that have the elemental altars, sometimes there is some object on the altar that one can then pick up and contemplate while being at that altar before moving on in the labyrinth to the next altar. Some labyrinth rituals and spaces will have objects that can be taken back with oneself as one takes the labyrinth walk back outside from center. The advantage of this is you have a bit of that labyrinth experience that you can then have with you for further reflection and remembrance. If it takes the form of a tarot card, for example, one can not only hold the card and do contemplation in the center after drawing it, but then as one walks the labyrinth and leaves the labyrinth, one can keep that image in mind. And then when one gets home to a personal space, can do additional work. Some labyrinths are dedicated to healing, releasing disease as one goes to the center, summoning health and repatterning as one is in the center, and integrating and resonating with the healing power and getting guidance about carrying it forward into daily life as one walks out of the labyrinth. Some labyrinth rituals are done in silence. Some labyrinth rituals are done with some type of rhythm instrument. There may be a single person playing a drum, or there may be a group of people playing a drum or different rhythms that harmonize together. Some labyrinths have people singing the entire time. Some labyrinths have recorded music or have instrumentalists doing live music. I've had some really powerful memories of labyrinth walks in which someone is playing harp music throughout the entire labyrinth walk. Another favorite instrument that is used in labyrinth walks is that of the singing bowl. And different singing bowls, whether they're made of metal or crystal or some other material, can be played together in harmonious sounds. I do think as one contemplates labyrinth work, it's important to do preparation for a labyrinth experience. Why are you walking the labyrinth? Find out about the particular labyrinth and labyrinth ritual that you're going to be taking part in, and give some thought about that before going to that labyrinth and beginning the walk. A decision to be made is, do you walk the labyrinth just yourself, or are you going with a group? In some wedding rituals involving labyrinths, there may be the couple coming in at separate times and then walking out of the labyrinth together. Some find it helpful to walk the labyrinth as a group to strengthen the connection among the group members. People walk a labyrinth at different rates. So one of the considerations for creating a labyrinth ritual and connecting with others as part of that process. How big is the labyrinth? How big are the pathways? Is there enough room for people to be walking to the center, as well as having people who have walked to the center walking out? Can you easily pass each other, or do you need to kind of negotiate that if the path is a bit narrow? Do you walk a labyrinth barefoot? What kind of foot gear do you wear for a labyrinth? Some indoor labyrinths require people to be in their stocking feet or barefoot. Some labyrinths will have some kind of coverings that one can put over one's shoes, and this is typically to protect the surface of the labyrinth itself, depending on what kind of material it is. I like walking a labyrinth barefoot if the texture of the labyrinth surface itself is such that that can be easily done, safely done, comfortably done. Thinking about a labyrinth experience, when I teach labyrinth rituals and labyrinth sacred work, I encourage people to consider the five parts of the labyrinth experience. The first part is preparation. This typically is done even before one goes to the labyrinth site. One takes some time, reflects on the labyrinth walk that is to come, focuses attention on the intention. Why do this labyrinth walk? Why do the labyrinth walk at this particular location at this particular time? To focus on that, what are the protocols for the labyrinth? What types of garb does one need to wear? Are there things that one needs to take part in the labyrinth walk? Spending a few moments envisioning oneself walking the labyrinth as part of preparation can be very helpful. Doing a bit of journaling before going to a labyrinth can help shape the labyrinth experience. Doing some purification work even before going to the labyrinth site, this might take the form of smudging or doing a ritual bath, doing some special cleansing breath processes, playing some meditative music, different ways to get into the mood and to prepare for the labyrinth. Part two is the journey to the labyrinth and the labyrinth walk itself. Holding the thoughts of the labyrinth as one journeys to the space, and then what I like to do is to pause as one begins the labyrinth walk itself, to pause a few moments at the entrance to do a prayer, honoring the labyrinth as a sacred place, invoking the divine, tuning to the divine in the form or forms that are connected with the labyrinth and that are pertinent to yourself and your own personal practice. This second part, as one begins the walk, that one focuses on that walk to the center and releases what one does not need to have in consciousness, to let the walk to the center be liberating, cleansing, continuing that path. And then the third part of the labyrinth experience is being in the center. How long to be in the center? Most of my labyrinth walks, that length of time is really determined intuitively. But there may be pragmatic considerations if one is doing a labyrinth walk and there's a variety of people all taking part and there's limited space in the center to be able to do centering work there. But ideally, you are able to be in the center and to go deep to connect with the sacred in a strong way and to receive guidance, to experience yourself being nurtured, to have healing and wellness, repatterning happening within yourself. So the center part of the labyrinth is a time for deep reflection, for meditation. And there may be a ritual itself that happens in the center if this is part of a group experience. Or if you're doing this as a solitary practitioner, one may want to do one's own type of circle in the center. If the format of the labyrinth ritual and the venue are such where that's possible. After one has been in the center for a time, then one goes into the fourth part, which is the journey out. As one does the journey out, one is able to call to mind the experiences of the center. One is symbolically moving around the labyrinth and letting the powers of the labyrinth experience and the insights and the healing that has been unfolding to intensify. And then as one reaches the entrance and the exit of the labyrinth, one does well to pause again and to give thanks to the labyrinth, to the divine, for the experiences, the insights, the healing that have been part of the labyrinth walk. Part five is the integration and manifestation in daily life of labyrinth wisdom, healing, peace, wellness, creativity. There are several ways that this can be done. Going from the labyrinth to some location where one could sit down with a journal and set down an account of the experience and insights and perspectives that have emerged from the labyrinth walk. Or it might take the form of going from the labyrinth walk back to one's home area and to do further reflection, journaling, and process then. As part of this fifth phase of the labyrinth walk experience, one would do well to pay attention to dreams, meditations, daydreams, flashes of insight that may occur following a labyrinth walk. Not only one can benefit from the labyrinth walk itself and the time at the center, but there is a time release effect for many people, and that the labyrinth continues to work its magic as you integrate the labyrinth experience in your day-to-day life. I do think it's important to have some way of being able to set down thoughts and experiences, memories, insights, ideas that have been part of the labyrinth walk. Another way of helping to integrate this is to be able to talk to a loved one about your experiences with the labyrinth. Some people like to create something following a labyrinth walk. To write a poem, a short story, to paint a picture, to do a collage, to craft some piece of art, create a song or a chant, to actually let the power of that labyrinth experience take a form of creative spiritual expression. What are some things that we can consider as part of weaving labyrinths into our own spiritual practice? Recognizing by having a labyrinth experience that we are part of a much larger community of humans that have chosen to have that as part of their spiritual practice. Whether the labyrinth is indoors or outdoors, whether it's in one's imagination, whether it's in cyberspace, labyrinths can be teachers. Labyrinths can connect us to that magic of labyrinths from the past, that which is unfolding in the present day, and labyrinths to come. I invite you, as follow-up to this podcast, to continue your exploration of labyrinths. You may want to go online. You could Google the word labyrinth or labyrinths. You could take a look at the labyrinth locator. You can read up about the history of labyrinths. You can do a search for labyrinth events and get a sense of the kinds of events that have happened and that are happening and that are scheduled to happen involving labyrinths. I am very thankful to have had a variety of labyrinth experiences, and it's my intention to continue my exploration of labyrinths. Each time I've walked a labyrinth, I have found that to be beneficial. Every labyrinth I've walked, even labyrinths that might have a similar design, there is a power, an energy about each location, each ritual that is done involving a labyrinth. And I really appreciate that diversity. And I appreciate the common ground of labyrinths being an ancient and contemporary spiritual practice and spiritual tool. Thank you all for listening to Labyrinths in this Nature Spirituality podcast tonight. If you'd like more information about Labyrinths, I invite you to share your ideas and questions with me via social media, to post under the post I've put out in the last day or two, announcing this podcast. That's one way of doing it. Or you could message me on Facebook or Instagram or send me a tweet through Twitter. But probably the best way is to send an email if you have any particular questions or comments on this podcast. My email is Selena, S-E-L-E-N-A, at circlesanctuary.org. For more information about Circle Sanctuary, you can find us on the web, circlesanctuary.org. You can find us on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. And for more information about me, Selena Fox, and the work that I do, not only with Circle Sanctuary, but in other contexts, you can find me on Instagram, Selena Fox, Twitter, Selena underscore Fox, Facebook, Selena Fox Updates. And my website, selenafox.com. I'm also now on YouTube, the Selena Fox channel. Thank you all for listening. I invite you to tune in next Wednesday for another episode of Nature Spirituality, and to also listen on Sundays at 6 p.m. Central to Nature Mystic. Nature Mystic and Nature Spirituality are part of the podcast that Circle Sanctuary sponsors and produces on our podcasting network, CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. And I invite you to also check out the podcast done by others in our podcasting team, Laura Gonzalez, Deborah Rose, and David and Jeanette Ewing. I wish you good labyrinth walking, and I invite you to continue your exploration and experience of labyrinths with this song, Walking the Labyrinth, by my friend and bard, Celia. Good labyrinth magic, good labyrinth walking. Many blessings. Good night.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.